Okay, everybody, welcome into another episode. This is the Good Bit Podcast, and we are here for another episode. Another modern film discussion, or films, plural, I should make clear, because I've mistakenly not watched one of the films that I apparently requested us talk about before. We recently put out an episode about Maestro, which is a new film that's on Netflix with Bradley Cooper. Myself and Ian Grieve chatted about it, and in the episode I mentioned about this new David Fincher film on Netflix called The Killer. And it was only until the other day, or yesterday even, when we were organising recording today, that I've forgotten to watch it. So our guest on today's episode, Amanda Grieve, or Amanda Beveridge and Ian Grieve, were talking about The Killer, the new David Fincher film that we've not actually seen. No. So we couldn't give any thoughts on that whatsoever. So that's a homework for us. But we did talk about, or we're going to talk about, Leave the World Behind, new Netflix film. I can't remember the director's name, but it stars Julia Roberts, Ethan Hawke, Mahershala Ali, Kevin Bacon. And yeah, really excited to talk about that with Mum and Dad.
Mum and Dad. I'm going to feel like I'm back in college.
Yes,
2020.
These are a little bit of context here. These two people they're about to speak to, both incredibly influential people in our lives, really.
Oh, yes.
Both taught us at different points in our lives and our kind of educational journeys and stuff. So it's going to be so much fun chatting some films with them. Because Ian's such a film guy and Amanda's so not. And that's always been the thing, you know. So it's a bit like us.
It really is.
Yeah, but how's your week been? How's everything going? Nice and cold outside in the -5 temperatures?
Oh, it's freezing, and work, I was freezing the other day. So normally we've got the door open to, you know, welcome customers.
Absolutely.
And the other day I opened the door thinking, yeah, I'll open it up, it'll be fine. I've got a heater on, the pans are on, so like it'll heat up and that's fine. And I had to open for an hour and then I closed it because I was chattering away.
It's pretty bad, man. Pretty bad. I mean, this is the coldest I remember it being in so long. I know people down south are getting snow and stuff. We're yet to experience snow, but I think we're at that stage where it's too cold. It's
too cold for snow.
For it to actually snow. Way, I remember December of 2022, the coldest I remember it being was -7. And I was at a football game at -7. What was I thinking? My mate Andrew Munt, who's been on the podcast before, actually, he wore 7 layers.
Well, that's smart.
To go for it. And he got so warm, he took all 7 layers off.
Oh, wow.
In the -7.
Wow.
So that was very good. That was never... that was.
Lesson learned, be prepared.
So I'm not wearing each layer for each minus temperature. So it's -5 out there. I'm not wearing 5 layers.
I did have 3 pairs of socks on today and big boots. And it helped for the most part. But at the end, like going for the train, I was like, no, I'm cold. My wee toes are getting a bit cold, a bit blue.
Yeah. So it doesn't necessarily make me want to watch a Christmas film, but I feel like there should be some films out there that's like, A, they're comfort films, but they're like warm hugs, where like you're really cold outside and you have to go in and watch something.
Yeah.
Don't know why I'm thinking The Lion King.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. I would say Moana as well, but Moana's not the type of film to watch at this time of year.
No, Moana, like that's a summertime movie.
That's a summer film.
That's what I need to move.
And I guess it's like comfort films or comfort TV shows as well, maybe for you.
Yeah, now I'm trying to think of what's a comfort TV. Well, Real Housewives.
Yeah, Criminal Minds.
Right
now,
that's being released, so I'm watching Real Housewives. I know, don't judge.
Who's going to judge?
Well, you never know. Criminal Minds, always.
Grey's Anatomy.
No, I fell off that.
All right.
19 seasons going on to 21 seasons or something. Too long.
Okay.
Too long. We're celebrating 20 years. Next year, I think. Yeah, 2005 it started. Look at me and my knowledge.
That was good, yeah.
Wow. I didn't need to Google that. I'm getting good, guys.
That's what I expect with you on the podcast, ladies and gents.
Well, hopefully I improve.
Well, you're about to talk to Ian and Amanda, so you better improve.
I do have notes. I thought, oh no, it'll be fine, we'll just talk. And we were sitting before we logged on and set everything up, and I was sitting with a notepad being like, Chris, ask me a question. Wait, you've asked me too many. Just one. Right, these are my thoughts. And like, I've got them all written down just in case.
Just in case you need something to say. But anyway, yeah, we're going to speak to Ian and Amanda.
Written down, wrote down.
Written, you've written them down, but you previously wrote them.
Oh, Jesus.
All right, keys piece. Well, listen, we're going to get Ian and Amanda on Zoom. We're going to chat to them. We're trying everything this season so far. It's just trial and error. So you might be a slightly different vibe and look to this episode, but we'll see if it works. And we're going to chat about two new films in the world of cinema. David Fincher's The Killer, and also based on a novel by Rumen Alam. I know that one for free because I've read the book, and I'm going to talk about that in a second. Mm-hmm. But it's on Netflix. It's called Leave the World Behind. Let's chat to Ian and Amanda. So we're with Mum and Dad. this is a really nice coffee we're having. We're doing like a wee tea date tonight, talking about film and television. What actually is in your mug? What's happened to your mug? It's all chipped.
It's all chipped, but it's still one I love because my students gave it to me.
It's very chipped.
So it's special because it says, not until I have drunk this.
I like it.
It's almost as good as your Empire biscuit.
And I don't know what it means, but they gave it to me as a present after I had one of my heart attacks, something like that.
Oh.
So it was fun.
Lovely.
Yeah, it was good.
Just for the people at home, just for context, then we'll show the Empire biscuit coaster. I'm showing it to the camera now, guys. There we go. Empire biscuit. I think I showed it on the last podcast anyway. There we go. Yeah. I'm just obsessed with this coaster. All right. So what a week it's been. It is absolutely freezing outside. Have you been able to stay nice and chilly, or I should say nice and cozy indoors?
Yes,
we have. It's been a little bit expensive with the old heating, but we've managed to stay cozy.
We've not really done well. We've been doing lots, actually. We've been doing an awful lot, but like a couple of hamsters in separate cages.
Mm-hmm. You know?
So I've got my little wheel that I go around on. Not very long.
Or fast.
Obviously, or fast. In fact, it's not so much a wheel as a sort of reclining. It's all metaphoric, of course. I don't have anything.
I'm really glad you cleared that up, though. I'm really glad you cleared that up.
Yeah, and Mandy's wheel is like a chair next to an easel, and she does lots of painting. So we're finding lots of reasons not to speak to one another during the day until we come together to watch movies in the evening or television because you've asked us to.
Well, I feel like that's been a recurring thing for years. And I like the fact now that you're finally taking me up on some recommendations, because there's been many times where I've given you some absolutely stellar recommendations, like, I don't know, Rush Hour 3 or High School Musical.
Oh, and you've
not actually watched them.
Well, I think he was probably wise not to watch what you recommend, considering this week's selection.
Hang on. I suggested Leave the World Behind, the Netflix film, which I'm hoping you have some form of opinion on. The other one, though, that I didn't recommend that I actually was going to watch myself and actually haven't seen yet is The Killer, the new David Fincher film.
You asked us to watch that, and we did.
And I would like to know your...
Have you watched it, Chris?
We have not watched it yet, because this is a misunderstanding, because I didn't ask you to watch this.
You did. I think if you watch... Well, you've maybe not released it yet. The last podcast we recorded, I don't know if it's been released yet.
It's not been, no. So it will be by the time people hear
this.
You
may not have edited it. Who knows? But I do remember during the course of that said podcast, which may or may not have been released yet, you did say, we'll watch The Killer for the next time.
Yeah. Because he came off the podcast saying, we've got to watch The Killer. And I'm like, good. Chris has recommended it. It'll be fun. He's young.
It should be amazing.
And with it.
And it's a David Fincher film. So we thought, even if Chris is wrong, which he usually is, it's a David Fincher film. So we watched it that evening.
Wow.
Chris Moffat.
Then when we were coming on this podcast, we had to re-watch it because we couldn't remember anything about it because it was that memorable.
Mm. So...
I'm no expert here, and I don't like to read people's minds or faces. But I'm getting the vibe that you didn't necessarily like this David Fincher film, which is quite rare.
I don't know what's given us that impression.
I don't know. I don't know if it's just like a bickering couple who are can't agree or
disagree. I think if you like David Fincher things, you'll appreciate the production values. But if you're looking for a good story and a good film, something to chat about over tea and biscuits, this isn't the one.
So again, I haven't seen it yet, and you're right, I have not edited that podcast yet. One of my first questions was going to be if Ian has actually watched Maestro again in a dark room with headphones.
Not yet, but I haven't got my room right.
What?
I need to shift my room around before I do that.
Again. Turn the lights off and get a lazy boy chair or something.
I do, because I've discovered the reason we're sitting here and not in my studio where we should be doing this is because I don't have a space where we can do these kind of things. And it's not conducive to watching anything and stuff like that. So I need to move it all around again.
Amanda looks so happy about that.
Yeah, well, she does it all the time, but you don't notice it with her.
I never move my room has stayed the same. You move it around, you buy bits of wood, I hear hammering, that's it, perfect, got the perfect desk. Every time we need to use it, no, I need to move it around.
It's man activity.
Distraction. Get writing your songs.
Rummaging in my drawers and things like that. I did Mind Killer. To get back on subject, yes. This is what you know the good bit is all about. I wanted to watch it because it was Fassbender and because it was a David Fincher film. And I was a bit intrigued by Tilda Swinton being in the mix and all that kind of thing. And it wasn't bad at all. It was, I think it, as you know, I don't like to sort of watch things just to criticise them. That's not my game. But I like his work. I like their work a lot. And I couldn't help noticing that it was obviously based on a comic book.
And is it?
And that's because of all the narrative, the first-person narrative by the protagonist at the beginning. It opens with a lot of that, which isn't necessarily badly written, don't get me wrong. But it was. It's not how narratives like that, maybe it's just my imagination, but in the past, narratives like that in movies tended to be better, or to my taste anyway, less plot driven, I don't know what I'm trying to say, because that's not actually true either.
The whole thing was that,
but it wasn't
just the beginning.
There was a comic book narrative. It's got a comic book narrative, and I don't even, you know, I don't mind comic books, but I don't necessarily think people have conquered the ability to translate that onto screen. And for it to be a good experience, a very good experience cinematically. Not bad, but, you know, it's just my taste. And that's the only thing really that put me up. There was a couple of really good scenes in it, and the tension's quite good. And the violence is very Fincher. It's violent, you know, it's not glamorous at all. But you are left wondering why. What's it trying to say?
Okay.
And it's almost at the moment people are again, it might just be me, I don't know how Mandy feels or you feel, but you almost are looking for some sort of not message but premise nowadays, because the world is so fucked up, you know, and so rubbish, and you're looking for something to sort of say to you, well, what about this, have a think about this. And The Killer isn't one of those films, if that's what you're looking for. If you're looking for something from David Fincher that has a message, it doesn't, I don't think.
Yeah, maybe what?
It's a revenge movie, really. And just as I said, if you like David Fincher, you're probably going to, because every second sentence you said just there, you were talking about Fincher.
Yeah.
And Fincher this and Fincher that. I don't really know much about Fincher, so I was looking for entertainment value, and I found it was a bit dragging. I also respond to color, and it was all grayscale or whatever, and I can't deal with that. I need a little bit of technicolor. We've invented it. Why does no one use it anymore? Poor old Dorothy Gale invented it, didn't she? The Wizard of Oz, and then it's never been used again.
She opened the door for us all.
And herself. So, well,
it was a boy's. It was very much. No, I'm not allowed to say that anymore, am I?
Well, you're going to need to say it now.
Oh, it was a boy film.
No, but that's a whole episode.
But I'm not allowed to say
it's
that.
It's a boy film. Yeah.
It's a boy film. You know, that's a whole episode in itself.
There's no many frocks in it.
Aw, no for me. I'll no watch that one.
We'll do a list of the top 10 boy films, and we'll do the top 10 girl films, we'll do the top 10 musical films, we'll do the top 10...
Yeah?
Yeah, hang on.
Colourful films.
But listen, every single one
Wes Anderson knows how to attract the eye.
We could do Wes Anderson, but I mean, if you've seen one of the Wes Anderson films, you've seen pretty much them all, because they're all the same kind of...
Well, I didn't like that. I don't like the one and only one I've seen. No, what did I see? That French newspaper
French newspaper. That's a totally different film.
What was it called?
The French Dispatch.
I quite liked that.
I liked it as well.
Dispatch was a French newspaper.
Yeah, I quite liked that. I've got 24 hours to watch Asteroid City, because I rented it on Prime Video a month ago. And I've still not gotten around to watching it. And I had an alert today. You've got 24 hours. Oh, God.
You also told me that before Christmas, so you really have had more than 24 hours.
I really, yeah.
Well, listen, if you've seen any of David Fincher films like Fight Club or Seven, they're not, you know.
Oh no, I liked Fight Club and I liked Seven.
But what I'm saying is both are very dark and not very colourful though, and that's exactly what he does.
They're not blue. They're not that greyscale.
They're not
cold.
Right.
What do you call it? Bleached. The
filter type.
Oh, there's a name for it. Graded,
yeah,
you know, graded it, you know, bleached,
and there was more than one character. There was only okay. one character in this, really. It was all from one person's point of view, and it was a revenge movie, and it was very quiet. There was no dialogue, really,
for the whole film.
The narration, not really. There's occasional bits of dialogue, but it keeps going back to the narration and. It wasn't, I mean, I watched it all, so I didn't sort of go off to my bed or anything, just waiting for, you know, hoping that something might happen. But there's a couple of good scenes in it. The scenes
between him and Tilda Swinton can't give anything away, but it's quite a good scene. They're both.
And the fact that she's described as a Q-tip is quite good, actually. Mm-hmm. Tilda Swinton does look like a Q-tip. A cotton bud.
I've never noticed.
She's a good actor, though. She is a good actor.
Yeah, they all are. Yeah. So there's no problem with that. It's if it was like in the tradition of I don't know to get you know she's already called me a bit of an art wank this evening, you know, so I might as well be one. But there's in things like the Crime and Punishment, Dostoevsky, that's an examination of the guilt you feel after you commit a murder and all this sort of thing. That's what made it a wonderful film. And so people have studied that in a wonderful book, sorry, and people have studied that in film. But by comparison, if it doesn't attempt to do that, that's not what it's about. It is a revenge film, you know, and as such, fine. But as a comparison, watching something like True Love, that series which we've watched as well, that starts off very slowly and you're wondering where you're going and then it pays off sort of about halfway through. That does examine those kind of things, that the feeling of guilt, the feeling of justifying your actions and, you know, trying to weigh it up and trying to convince yourself that what you're doing is right. And it's quite an explosive subject in the world at the moment as well, you know. That's for me, that's at the moment it's that thing about having some validity, so having something to be able to discuss in the pub afterwards, you know, whereas films like Killer, it's not really, it's just like, yeah, it was good, it filled a hole. That's what my dad used to say. It filled a gap, filled an hour and a half or 2 hours.
Although I suppose it was interesting in that he is a job within his job. He's a killer. What? That's not really a spoiler, is it? Because it's called Killer. He's an assassin. And then, so he has no empathy for human life, no value, blah, 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 and does it. And then when something happens to him, I suppose, then we see how valuable he feels human life is. I suppose if he's been around killing and then he feels he needs to get revenge when somebody does something to him, then I suppose there's a double value.
Yeah.
There we go.
Do you think it would have made any difference if you saw it at the cinema? Do you think if it's a film to be seen on a big screen? Then
yeah.
Yes, probably.
Actually, yeah.
If it's a comic book kind of film.
Definitely. Because when you're in the cinema, you're focused on it and only it. And inevitably, at home, you're focused on two or three different things.
Because everything was in quite large scale. You know, it was close up. There wasn't a lot of distance. Mm. You know, everything was quite close up. So you would be quite surrounded by it all. You know, you would be there within that thing. So, gosh.
It'd be like that watching. I've not watched the new Scorsese movie. And I'd like to watch that on a big screen and switch all the lights up and pretend I'm at the cinema, basically because I'm becoming aware that you miss the tempo. You know, again, it's a bit wanky, but you know, the tempo of the movie is maybe something that you're completely missing because you're not just focused on it. Your phone can ping and you can, you know, and you'll look at it, yep. Or you know, you might pause it because you're going to want to go and make yourself another cup of tea, you know, or something, whatever. That's not ideal, you know. So, so you can what? No, no,
that's so boring for them listening to us talking about what we think.
That's why you're here.
He literally just told me at dinner. Told me at dinner. Oh, I've told Ian to watch The Killer. I was like,
that's not what I said. Well, clearly, I've obviously said it in the last episode and totally forgotten about it because I didn't remember until last night when Ian said, oh, wait, we watched The Killer as well. And I was like, ah, yes, that was one I was supposed to be watching.
I would have watched it. I would have made the effort for you. There you go. I would have made the effort and done my homework. Okay, be a good student.
But anyway, I don't know. Yeah, anyway, that's, you know, we should talk about something we've all seen, you know, but I would recommend it, yes.
I'm going to watch it, yeah.
Because it's, you know, it's fun and they are interesting performances, and there maybe is something in it. Maybe down the line it's one you'll see again and go, you know, it might be that. You know,
be interesting to hear a different person's point of view, because we're always in the same house, the same mood, the same things that have been happening, you know, the same environment. So we're watching the film in the same environment. It might be interesting to hear, meet in a pub and meet someone that's watched it in a different environment. Because you just become like what you live with, really, don't you?
Whereas, yeah.
Stephen King said that. Do you know that? Do you know why people get to look like each other when they get older? It's because they experience things at the same time of their life. So their wrinkles develop at the same time, same age. As they get older, they're developing, they're giving the same stresses at the same age and things like that and the same period. And that's why your wrinkles develop. And this was the Stephen King, you know?
Yeah.
I think that's
good. That's quite interesting.
Same line of work. You've been in the same productions together, same grey hairs.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's why we look so much the same. I don't know where he's got all his food from, though.
I think that's why people look like their dogs.
Why? I
don't know. They do.
All right.
Iona and Mandy were just saying that when we watch things at home, we talk to each other and we talk as we go. We wouldn't do that in the cinema. So there is definitely a difference in the focus. Because I find that when we watch things, when we used to go to the cinema a lot, which we should do again, we didn't necessarily agree. You know, I would like something more than her or she, you know. Whereas when you watch something together in the house, you do tend to talk each other into feeling the same way about something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Maybe.
You know, I don't know what other people are like at home, but that certainly happens to us, I think.
That happened to me at the cinema a lot. You know how, like, that moment when you first came out of the cinema and you're just on your own for a bit and you maybe go to the toilet or you put stuff in the bin and you go outside and you go, yep, really enjoyed that. And then you go on the escalator with your friend or whoever you're with and they hated it. And you feel like a bit like an idiot. Oh, yeah, I hated it as well. Yeah. Like,
you get the Benito Mussolini's. You know, Gregor's like that. He's sort of like on the escalators in Renfrew Street, he announces, that was brilliant. That's the best film ever. You know, because he's never short of a, you know,
superlative.
A superlative. or that was just bollocks. You know, that announcement. So you don't have a chance. It's kind of like, well, actually, I quite liked it. Oh, well, you're an idiot.
Our rule was that we couldn't talk about it until we were on the escalators, because we didn't want anybody else's opinions to sway us as well.
Yeah, that's right. So escalator dictators. I don't know what to call them.
That could be a good episode. The best of the escalator
dictators. Yes. Yeah. One word reaction movies, you know.
That'd be a good vocal warm up. Well, another movie.
2 hours, I'm never going to get my life back for, you know.
Have you seen any films of that recently where it's just you felt as if you've wasted 2 hours? Is that the killer? Are you choosing to say that that's one of the ones that you've wasted your time?
No, not at all.
No, okay, good.
No, not at all.
All right, I'll check it out then. Another movie that was on Netflix most recently is based on this novel right here, Leave the World Behind, by Rumaan Alam. Yes, and we were in Manchester in November of 2022, myself and Iona, Dev here. I stopped there because I thought that's weird that I'm full naming you when you're sitting next to me. So we were in Manchester, we were in Waterstones, and I was walking around and just picking up the new books that were out, and one of the kind of like store assistants came over to me and was like, oh my goodness, like, if you're going to read one book this year, it has to be this one. It has to be that. This is, I've read it and I read it in a day. I couldn't put it down. This is going to be on everybody's Christmas list this year. This is the one for you. So I don't know if we'd done his job correctly or if he was just looking for a promotion or something like that, but I bought the book based on that. I was like, you know what? I'm looking for a new book anyway. Thank you very much, James, or whatever his name was. James from Manchester. Took it up the road, didn't read it for about a year, Eventually did read it and really enjoyed it. Now, from those who have maybe read it before or maybe seen the film that we're going to talk about here, the Netflix film that came out at the end of 2023, it kind of leaves up to you in terms of what you get from the film, in terms of the message of the film, the ending of the film, and the theme throughout it, where it's going and then what it actually leads to. And I actually thought it was easier to kind of understand and get my own opinions by watching it than it was reading it, which I found interesting because a lot of people say the reverse of that. You know, when you're reading a book and it's totally in your head
sometimes.
And you get more detailed stuff in your head because of the book. Where in actual fact, I liked seeing it in front of me. So we watched this on the 1st of January 2024, was our first film of the year, watching Leave the World Behind. And I think it did a very good depiction of the book. Actually, it was quite similar. I thought it did a good job in kind of staying true to the book itself. I don't know how much the author had a say in the story. Although it was, what was it, endorsed by the Obamas, the film?
Yeah.
What a revelation that was.
Barack and Michelle Obama, yeah.
Yeah.
I think Barack Obama had certainly read the book. I would imagine Michelle has too. But I think, I think they had quite a lot of advice, didn't they? Looking up some stuff. That's interesting that the book, you felt, was there too much detail in the book or something? Or did you feel it was telling you what to think about really obscure things?
I think that's what it was. And Iona kind of said this when she was watching the film, that she felt as if like maybe it was maybe leading to something and we didn't really have the payoff that we thought was coming.
Yeah.
Now, that's done on purpose, right? But at the same time, at the end of a film, you go, ah, you know what I mean? Like, oh, that's where they were going with that. Okay. Whereas a book, I was kind of like, I was waiting for something to happen. I was waiting for a chapter to end. I was waiting for, you know, a big twist, and it just wasn't coming. And I don't know if I was getting frustrated with a book where I wasn't getting frustrated with the film, is what I'm trying to say, I think.
Yeah.
Which is interesting. So I definitely...
Nothing's ever explained, is there? There's never an explanation. It's just things happen. And
right.
Yeah.
And you don't know why, really, and you never do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know if that's like a common, you know, belief that the film is, you know, a little bit easier on the eye, obviously, than the book. But... I really enjoyed both aspects, but I think I preferred the film itself. I'm curious to know your thoughts, because obviously chatting about the killer might have been a nice little switch over if you maybe enjoyed this film a little bit more, or did you have similar opinions? What did you think of Leave the World Behind?
It lulled me into a false sense of security at the beginning, because I love a wee house scene, I love a wee family, I like all that, you know, I can identify with all that and have that sort of familiar thing. And then... I suppose I felt a wee bit like the characters felt. You know, you were in this secure world. I felt as a viewer as well, kind of, I can get this, they're on holiday, blah, blah, blah. And I didn't know why these obscure things were happening. But I suppose that's the same feeling as they had. I mean, that sounds like I really thought about this answer, but that's just come from me.
Yeah,
it's
really impressive.
But I suppose you're left, or there's two deer in the garden. That's not all that exciting, is it? But you think, oh, it's weird to see two deer.
It's quite interesting,
and more and more, but they all became a bit more frightening. Well, not frightening, but just weird. Nothing was frightening. I think that's what was interesting. Nothing was actually scary within itself. It was just all odd. The boat was quite scary.
That was pretty scary, yeah. I actually have the film on just now because we're just refreshing our memories on it before we came on to talk to you. And I forgot about the scene with the boat.
Yeah,
because it's almost like it happens, and that's the start of all these disasters and multiple kind of weird things that are happening. But no one really, we don't go back to it.
Yeah, that's it.
We don't know why it happened.
Yeah,
I know, we don't know the effects. We don't see anyone on the boat. It's kind of like, whereas we're used to it. It was a bit like Jaws, you know, this, the beach spinning, but there was some sort of result. There was some sort of effect, you know, there was cause and effect. There was no cause and effect in this.
Yeah.
There were just things. But then that's what it will be like. Things will just be a bit strange at the end of the world.
Yeah.
Won't go, oh, that's why, because there isn't an explanation.
And we're possibly not going to be equipped in the way that... Is it saying that? That in a way that we may have been 40 years ago?
Hmm. When there was no phones and no Wi-Fi and no
signal.
We
rely on too many things to help us get through.
There is a line. There's a line in it when the man says, I'm useless. I'm a useless man now. I've not got a phone.
Yeah, and even like, I think the GH character says something like, I remember the days before phones. Like, he's even saying that quite early on, as if like that's a little bit of foreshadowing there.
Yeah,
and I guess that is the message, that the fact that the world is kind of going to shit and we actually have no say in the matter.
Yeah.
Well, we rely so much on satellites and GPS and information being fed to us, and what we think, what our opinions are, what we like, what we don't like, that's influenced. Our trust of strangers is battered all the time. I mean, they have a go at us about... in the book, do they explain what the Spanish woman's saying in the book, in the novel?
No.
That's a good question. I forgot about her.
Yeah, that was actually the moment in the novel where I was like, oh, here we go.
Yeah.
Because he, you know, he goes out and then something happens. And then when he's back to the house, at first he's not even telling them about the woman. And I thought that, I genuinely thought that woman was going to have something to do with everything. And she was maybe going to find her way at the house.
Well, in many ways, that woman reveals everything. But because we don't speak her language, where many of the people watching it don't know the language either, that's... we're in the same position as the guy. So what Mandy's saying about us being in the position of the main protagonist is absolutely true, I suppose, you know, that
the ability
to understand one another.
That's a bit irritating, that bit, because you think you're trying to find out what's going on. You bang into someone and you just drive away. So it's a bit annoying. You sort of think, well, can we not stop and wait and see what she's trying to say? They must be able to communicate in some form.
Right. Could he have taken her back to the house and they could have done something with the phones or, you know, anything, written something down?
Maybe she was saying there's a giant octopus coming around, there's an alien landed or something. Do you know what I mean? Mm.
But that's what I was meaning about, though. Again, we're told to mistrust people. I mean, there's lots of things on... all the time about telling us, oh, look out for this scam or that scam, or, you know, now if your mum phones you and it sounds like your mum, it's not your mum, you know, that, my God, you know, it's getting really quite bad. You know, we're being informed about this, and so our distrust in other people is kind of being fed in a way, possibly. You know, I don't want to see what I do, but I can understand, and I can understand the guy's shame when he doesn't talk about it, because that was a bit embarrassing. That was a bit, he doesn't, it's not his finest, you know.
Yeah.
No, so all of that is quite, and in many ways, yeah, the things falling apart and not being able to understand them is, when you think about it, that's actually quite good.
I was thinking, when I was thinking about the wee girl sitting on the beach looking at the boat, there's nothing odd about the boat to begin with. She goes, look at that boat and things, and it's miles away. You think, why is she looking at that? And then she was right, it is odd. But she's the only one that sits, I'm just trying to think, because I said to Ian, I said, why is she finding that boat odd? And I didn't know why. And then she's the one that sort of says, blah, blah, blah. But everybody else on the beach, everybody else in her family is on their machines, aren't they? None of them are looking around. She's the only one that's not on a machine, because she can't use a machine, because she wants to watch Friends. And so that's the only reason, because otherwise she would be on a machine too. But she's off it. She's off her tablet, and she's looking at what's going on around her. And she's the one that's seeing the odd things. I don't know. I'm just thinking, well, maybe there was a message in that if you are looking, you'll see them. But we're just not looking. We're not looking.
Yeah. And I also think it's on purpose that it was the youngest person in the film who's the one noticing these things, because she's the one that notices the deer. She's the one that first sees the flamingos. Mm-hmm. She's the one that finds the further away kind of abandoned mansion. And I picked up on things like, for example, after the boat scene, they're in the car and they're all sitting there and they don't know what to say to each other. It's really awkward. And the first thing they say was, oh, there's a Starbucks. And they go into Starbucks as they're relying on Starbucks, and they're relying on their phones, and she's relying on Wi-Fi.
Something familiar,
something, you know, that they can grasp onto. And did you not think, I feel like Eno appreciate this more than Iona, at least I don't know about you, Mandy, but in terms of physical media in its own right, where, you know, signal goes down, Wi-Fi goes down and stuff, and she finds this house with all the DVDs. And it's currently this sense of comfort. Like, the world is ending out there. I'm seeing, you know, random animals appearing in my back garden, but it's okay because I can go to my room and I can watch whatever's in the room.
And DVD.
She can escape.
Yeah.
And that's what we do. And we do that all the time. And it's allowing people, It's allowing things to happen right under our noses, but we're being distracted by other things. We're not even looking up physically, never mind metaphorically.
Yeah.
It's quite scary.
It is. I mean, is there something metaphorical in the fact that it's a Friends episode in the very last episode? I think there's the last one, it's called. There's something in that, but...
I loved that, though. I don't know what it was. Maybe it's because I'm such a big fan of Friends, but like hearing the Friends song as the credits roll, there was something comforting to us.
I know. Because my daughter, like, who's your age, I mean, she, I mean, that was the song to her child, you know, her just even when she was getting ready to go out, she would just have Friends on just in the background. They know all the words. I don't know about you lot, but she would, you know, she knows all the scripts and things. It's just been there in your lives, hasn't it, as you've grown up?
I think that's the balance between that and the misanthropic, you know, that I hate people is the thing she says right before the title card.
Yeah.
I hate people.
You know, and how often have we, I know I've said that an awful lot.
Oh, yeah.
You know, do I mean it? Well, sometimes and probably not. No, but yeah, there is that thing that we have become misanthropic in our own worlds, and we're it is. I think it's not scary from the point of view that the world is terrifying enough at the moment. You know, nothing can outdo the craziness and the buffoonery and fuckheadedness of our governments, you know, the things that they come out with, and we're like jaw-droppingly kind of like bizarre, you know, like America and the election, and you just can't believe, you know, this is happening. So the world is pretty scary as it is at the moment, you know, and it has been throughout history. It's not the worst time, but you know. So I suppose anything that's put in cinema or in novels is competing with reality for, you know, craziness. But in terms of its slow message and you know, the uneasiness that it achieves, a lot of the things that the uneasiness that you would maybe get in a film like the Darren Aronofsky films, like Mother, and you know, which are just weird. And they can annoy you because they're just, sometimes you think this is just weird for weird's sake. Whereas the difference with this film, and it's quite refreshing about it, is the fact that you can relate to these ordinary people. They're teachers. Yeah. They're, you know, they don't have a fortune. They don't have a lot of money. You know, and there is that social thing as well that's always an undercurrent. I don't like people. There's no overt racism in it, but there is an undercurrent of that, you know, but it's never spoken. It's never,
I think there is, you know, in different
directions as well.
Yeah,
you know, there's presumptions and about each other. It's not just about race. It's about having money, not having
class,
money.
Yeah, family,
class, privilege, all these kind of things, and it's all mixed up. And I only just noticed, because we did what you did, we had a look at it quickly before doing this, and I noticed that there's a throwaway line on the beach where someone says something about the undertow. That undertow is crazy, and it's kind of like a suggestion that the subtext is mental. But what's lovely about it is no one's playing it, no one's going, here it is, you know. Yeah. It's making you uneasy.
Yeah, and I guess, as you say about him leaving the woman on the road and stuff, you know, he does that because maybe that's the type of character that he is, but it's not necessarily, it's not brought up that she's a Spanish woman or that she's a crazy woman just shouting on the street. It's more about him. That's something that he would do as a character.
Absolutely, yeah.
Just, you mentioned stuff about
being not crazy. She's not crazy. She's responding.
Right.
Like she's right.
Yeah,
they're the ones going, oh, that's weird, never mind, move
Let's
on.
Let's ignore it, yeah.
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 Yeah. You mentioned about it kind of being scary, but it's not what you see that's scary, it's the kind of building to something. You mentioned something about the kind of constant tension that is there, and it's got to do with the music slightly.
Yeah, and it was only actually, because I thought about all the music, like I remember that, but I couldn't remember what it was, and it was when we put it back on, and I heard it, I thought, oh my God, yeah, like that made me feel so uneasy watching it.
Yeah.
And it was, like, I felt it was quite slow, and I kind of struggled, I thought, where's this going? But I still had that, like, tension throughout the whole thing, which I was waiting for the moment of, like, release, or, like, the aha moment or the payoff or something, and I never got it. But yeah. I kind of like that.
Yeah, I was
going to
say, did you feel a bit dissatisfied by the fact that like, you didn't get that payoff? Because you are someone in movies and TV that appreciates the payoff. And that's probably why you enjoy TV shows more than films.
Yeah.
Because it's a constant new season, new episode, new character. And you didn't get that in this, I don't think.
No, and surprisingly, I'm actually okay with it. I don't know. I feel like with the podcast, this is helping me. I'm becoming much better at watching movies that are not my usual movies.
We've not even scratched the surface yet. I mean, we're watching one that's on Netflix. Wait till we watch something from Agnes Varda or something like that.
I know. Yeah. But Ian looks, I mean, when I'm the same as you, Iona. I mean, we'll watch a film and it'll just end. And he knows how I'm going to feel. He'll just look at me with this sort of nervous look and I'll just be... What is this new fashion of just let's not bother explaining ourselves? Yeah. We'll just make a film that ends.
Yeah.
It makes me laugh now. I know there's some films at the end and you go, okay.
Ian's going, oh no, please don't end there. And up come the blooming titles. And you just think, what was that?
Yeah. I think I'm just getting used to it. Like I'm just, because you've shown me a couple of movies, like one that I've not liked so much or whatever. And I'm just getting used to watching it and trying to have an opinion on it and like force myself to get used to it, because normally I'll watch a trailer and I'll be like, no, I'm not watching that because I wouldn't like that kind of thing.
No,
do you know what I mean?
I totally get
it
that,
might
but
stop you from trying to guess it. It might stop you from being
maybe the reason you're always
in the moment.
Yeah. You're maybe predicting all the endings because you're just watching films that are gonna have obvious endings.
Maybe that's what it is. Maybe I'm not that smart.
You know, but I keep telling her though, it's good to watch things that kind of leave up to interpretation and things you don't like. You know what I mean? Because then you kind of develop your opinions and you develop your tastes and stuff.
Yeah,
and,
but I think my whole thing is as well is that I feel like if I start to like really think about a movie or like a like this, if I really start to think into things and read into all the details, I'm going to make myself crazy and I'm going to like. And then I'll start Googling stuff and then that's just not good. I'll get down a rabbit hole and I will not get back. I don't know.
Yeah, that totally makes sense. Because I tend to overthink things as well, and it's not until I've come out of the film. So that's why I prefer watching films in the cinema, because as you say, we're just kind of in amongst
you're
it
there.
And there's nothing to distract you. There's no Google to go and look up. What does that mean or whatever? And then as soon as I see someone else's opinion, I am admittedly really easily influenced, because lots of other folk have really serious opinions and have really looked into it and have really prepared for themselves to watch this film. And I sometimes feel like, why didn't I think of that? You know, but sometimes it's nice to have that initial, I'm just want to watch it for entertainment purposes. You were talking earlier on about The Killer and you just wanted to watch it to see a good story and you didn't really get that because they're making you really think about it. Sometimes it's good just to have one of those films that you can just throw on, a comfort movie in that
absolutely.
Sense.
Absolutely.
You know?
Yeah. It's the same with music or art or, you know, you don't get a standard narrative when you look at a painting or you listen to a piece of music. You know, regardless of what it is. I mean, Mozart, I don't know if Mozart actually said it, but you know the whole idea of music with a bump bump at the end to tell you when it's finished and when you know when to clap. I mean, that's a relatively modern thing. That's popular culture, you know. But other times people are making work of all sorts to sort of, for you to create an impression. They're expressive and you have to create an impression, and it's about how you arrive at it and listening to it or looking at it, or in the case of watching a film, you might have one opinion one day and a completely different one the next. I've done that myself with films.
Yeah, absolutely.
A few times where I've gone and see something and absolutely hated it.
Yep. La La Land.
La La Land was one. Arrival was another one.
The Star Wars sequels.
No.
Do you not like those?
They're a bit
made for because they had to make them, but
I prefer the series on Disney Plus. You know, things like
Mandalorian.
Yeah.
What did you? Let's talk about the cast then, because some really big names. I saw them on Graham Norton actually, and I was like, are they the ones in this film? Julia Roberts, Ethan Hawke. Kevin Bacon pops up as well.
Yeah.
Mahershala Ali, is that his name?
Yeah.
I mean, I saw him in Green Book with Viggo Mortensen, and he was absolutely outstanding.
He's brilliant.
A brilliant actor. And I thought, he was incredible in this one. He actually stole the film for me, I think, because he somehow, you know, if this, if anybody showed up in the middle of the night to this Airbnb that you've rented, it's going to be weird, right? But somehow, he comes across as weird, intimidating at first, but then you actually, you believe him immediately. I don't know if it's because he's kind of soft-spoken and he speaks slowly.
Yeah,
and
he's kind really of, calm.
He's very calm. He's a calming thing. Character. Because Julia Roberts is freaking out. And I mean, Ethan, I love the fact Ethan Hawke just invites him in. Because he's a lot more, like, he's a lot more trusting, I suppose. But, yeah, there's something about...
It
was his house, wasn't it?
That's what he's claiming, yeah. But it is his house, you know.
He knows where everything is.
Yeah, he goes to the basement.
His body language, everything is...
That's fine. Yeah. I just suddenly thought...
He knows where the keys are, he knows where the gun is, he knows where the money is, you know.
And it's kind of minimalist house, isn't it? So you really need to know where everything is to make things work. I mean, I've been to some, you know, what do you call them? That are confusing, you know. We were in one this year. What do you call them? Airbnbs, you know.
Oh, okay.
What's the thing that makes that work? You know, he knew everything.
He did, yeah. That's why you believe him.
Bigger than Airbnbs that I've been in, you know.
Yeah.
How does the coffee machine work? That's always one. You know?
That's all you need in the TV. Yeah.
He knew.
To be fair, it's one of those weird cookers that don't heat up.
Yeah.
Well, that'll get you.
He knew all of that.
Stovetop things. What are they called? Induction.
Yeah. Oh, right, okay. Oh, yeah, we've got one of them. Still don't know how to work it. It's been about 4 years.
Yeah. At first, I thought there was more of a story with them. I did wonder, you know, I thought, was this kind of seedy? Is this really his daughter, or is it...
That's what I was thinking, too. I was thinking it's not his daughter.
And the reason he's out down is this, is he uber rich and this is just sort of like a weekend getaway sort of thing and all that sort of thing. But no, it really, I don't know if it had anything to do with that really, but no, it was brilliant. And then the relationships sort of dancing around one another as well, that like the relationship between, what's his name? Clem. Is it Clem?
Clay. Yeah, Ethan Hawke's character.
Ethan Hawke's character and the daughter, and Maharaj Ali's character and Julia Roberts, and hitting that, they were quite interesting scenes, because we were wondering at first. We thought Chris doesn't like scenes with a lot of dialogue, does he? But actually, that started to happen, you know, and it was building quite nicely. I thought Julia Roberts was really uncompromising. I really liked what she did. She didn't. Yep. She was caring that it's important that I'm liked in this, and she wasn't thinking about her image. She was playing quite a horrendous misanthropic woman, you know, who has a family and has jaded to the point where it's kind of like, right, we need a break, we need a holiday. I hate people, let's get out of the city. You know, we can understand that, how that can put you in, you know, in a certain place. I think we've been there, you know.
Yeah.
We're not the best versions of ourselves. And of course, that's tested a lot in these circumstances, I suppose.
Yeah. I love the scene where they go to Kevin Bacon's house. Because he is clearly, he maybe knows more about the situation than everybody else, but he's not giving too much away. And they have this kind of standoff at his front door. Now, he's someone that they claim to know. But he's completely on the defensive. You couldn't take your eyes off this scene because you didn't know if he was going to shoot him or not. It totally flips the film, you know?
I thought it was interesting that, I don't know, I'll say this and I'd shut up for a bit and let other people speak, but what I really found interesting about that scene was that it was an exercise in, or it seemed to me anyway, an exercise in who's the richest man in the world now, between the three of them. And it's always going to be the person that's prepared for the circumstances that we live in. You know, and it's like that. There's an old play by J.M. Barrie called The Admirable Crichton, where this boat crashes and they all end up on a desert island, and the butler becomes the leader of the society because he's the only one that knows survival techniques in a desert island and how to make a fire, how to build a, you know, the toffs don't know anything. So he becomes the leader, and then and all the women sort of fancy him, and all the, you know, and all this kind of thing, you know, he and all the other men become subservient to him. Anyway, I was kind of in the back of my mind reminded of all that, because Kevin Bacon then in that environment, immediate environment, becomes the leader. He's in charge. He's prepared.
We need him.
Ignored, you know, and so quite rightly, he's playing the king. And no, you don't impress me. New rules now, and I understand the changing rules, and you
How
don't.
How did he know?
Yeah.
I don't know. Is it in the book? Any clues?
If I'm honest, I don't remember.
I was doing research, when I was looking at online about it, apparently his wife's teeth had fallen out.
Okay, yeah, that may have been... That was what I seen. That was Iona ran to the other room when the kid's teeth started falling out. Remember?
Oh, it freaked me out. I didn't actually run to the room. That's a bit dramatic.
No, but
right?
You were thinking about it.
I did.
Apparently that guy's wife's teeth had fallen out, so maybe that's how...
He knew that he looked into it.
Stuff happening.
I don't remember that from the book, no.
I know what to read the book to see what you've not picked up on.
I know, I was available to be fair.
And also in the book, it explains that the teeth are falling out because of the noises.
The noise. That's exactly what it is. Yes.
Yeah.
And you know what?
Yeah, I googled that, by the way, right, just before I was looking it up. And it was something about a microwavable weapon. Honestly, I don't understand. But it was all about noises and like... lots of numbers.
As a weapon.
Yeah, it was like, I don't know. It was just like, it said something about microwaving a weapon. I thought, well, that's quite interesting.
Mm.
Yeah.
Using microwaves to destroy the world.
Yeah.
So it's kind of flipping things as well, because people who are paranoid and into conspiracy theories and so on are often
it's
told.
On TV
that,
right
the, now. The scene of the teeth coming out is on our screen right now.
Oh, wow.
Ah, right, okay.
And it's horrendous.
I'm not watching it.
We've got the subtitles, my teeth. yeah, that's one thing from the book that they didn't really pick up on in the film, I guess, is the noise that they're supposed to have heard. In the book, it's like, you know, they hear this noise and every single time they hear it, it is like horrendous. It is, you know, they have to go and hide in a quiet room or whatever and just really grab it. They didn't really play on it that much in the film. It is there, but it's more so like a...
That stopped recording.
Okay.
Sorry.
It is more like a, what is that? More so than a, this is terrible situation. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, mm-hmm. They could have probably done more with that.
It doesn't seem to be part of the horror of it all.
We're encouraged to ridicule people who are conspiracy theorists who,
they're woke or whatever.
You get lots of that about, oh, there's all these planes that the government are flying about, but they're not admitting
that's what they say. The planes. That's what they say. The noises. Planes that only the government know about.
Yeah.
In the book.
And of course, if anybody talks, they're ridiculed, you know. And of course, I suppose Kevin Bacon is ridiculed for stocking up on canned goods and creating an environment, creating a bunker. People would think you were crazy.
Not his bunker.
You know, no, I know, but people who do that, you know.
And he's got medicine and stuff.
I'm doing it in my room. That's why I'm collecting all these books and all these DVDs and everything, because I don't want the man to know what I'm watching and reading.
Yeah, and we're going to wait, and we're going to have Netflix and Disney Plus and stuff. They're all going to go away, and we're all going to go over to Ian's house, and we've got an unlimited selection of books and vinyls and DVDs to watch.
Yeah, yeah.
Who's the man?
What's the man, man?
The man.
Man's out to get you, you know?
The bogeyman.
It's the man. She's not watched Apocalypse Now or any of these things, so she doesn't know.
Yeah, enough. What about in terms of...
Stick it to the man.
Right.
What was your highlight of the film? What was your favourite moment? What was your best bit?
Oh, don't ask me that. I've not thought
this
about
is genuinely the question I ask everybody every episode.
This
is my loyal fan here.
Oh no, come back to me.
Okay, Ian or Amanda, favourite scene, best bit from the film?
I actually quite like the teeth bit. I like that.
The teeth bit.
I thought, oh, that was something, because that, although everything was scary but not horrific, that was the only thing that you thought, oh, that's horrific.
That's horrific, yeah.
Everything
this
else
actually turned into a horror film.
This is scary, but I'm not scared.
Yeah.
I quite like that, but it was very graphic.
It was very graphic.
I needed that, and I like the graphic horror stuff.
My favorite bit was the scene with Kevin Bacon at the kind of Mexican standoff at his door. I also really liked when the flamingo showed up, because it gets to this point where you're just like, what on earth is, like, I need to know what is happening now, because it's like three or four kind of obscurities that's happened. And I also love the bit at the end where she finds all the DVDs and she just takes her time and she's sitting there eating a packet of crisps and then goes up and plays Friends. Like, it's just so, it's just human nature, isn't it? It's just what you would do in that situation. Like, everything's going to shit outside, but you've got friends inside, so you're fine. I just found that really relatable.
I was also the bombing of New York in the distance. Oh, I don't know. They make me kind of like feel something, a bit kind of like, so scary. They're the things that made me feel something.
Yeah, real life situations. It's New York right in front of you, sort of thing. Yeah,
yeah, they affected me. Everything else I could watch quite comfortably, but they made me.
We've also had, and it's not happened since the Second World War for a lot of people in the West, is we've recently had a civic upheaval.
Right.
A huge civic thing. That's forbidden us to meet other people and go outside, and, you know, a civic order, if you like, which was unheard of in Western countries because of the pandemic, you know. So our understanding of these kind of apocalyptic films has slightly changed, and we have personal experience of these things in some way, shape or form, you know. I'm not saying that, you know, we've all experienced what's been going on in Ukraine and Gaza, but it's not at that level. But in terms of just watching popular culture, we have all experienced that. So it has shifted slightly, you know, where our norms are, when they are affected, our everyday kind of behaviour is affected. It does freak us out.
But we've just let that pass. You know, if that was created, man-made, then it just takes something a bit more lethal and we're all doomed, but we're just letting that go. You know, nobody's doing anything like as we do. We just have things done to us all the time, and we don't do anything.
We just get on with our lives because it's the most convenient thing for us to do.
Yeah, you just move on.
Yeah.
But they're inventing stuff in China. I read something or saw something that was, and it's more, It's biological warfare. It has to be, because it's this thing that attacks your brain.
That's what I mean. They just need to release that.
Why is that not in the news? Why is that? Why are we not going? Do you not think maybe?
Because the news are only allowed to show what they're allowed to show.
Not such a good idea anymore to do that kind of thing. You know, based on recent experience.
That's what I mean. We're just letting it happen.
Mm. Yeah, absolutely.
That was a very scary film to make us watch.
I'm very sorry, yes, but I did really fancy it.
People think that we're just going to be killed.
Quite an optimistic film to watch on New Year's Day.
loved it. And my Christmas jammies.
That's going to be our...
You must be very confident in your relationship.
I'm still not allowed to watch, what is it, your favourite film? Well, the Coen brothers.
The Big Lebowski, so just ruin it for me.
You can't watch The Big Lebowski. What about No Country for Old Men? You watched that one? We've not watched that one.
Actually, we should watch that.
I don't like
that's a good one. Brothers. You don't like the Coen brothers?
Really?
Yeah.
Right,
let's watch that one. And what else is coming up soon that I want you to watch? I want you to go to the cinema to see The Iron Claw. It is a movie starring Zac Efron. And it is about a Texas wrestling family from the 1970s. And it looks incredible.
The Iron Claw.
Not sold.
I want you to watch that. And we'll find some other stuff. There's loads coming out.
What's it?
Claw.
The Iron Claw.
I'm going to be forced to watch this.
I want you to watch The Holdovers.
What's that one?
It's a film that's coming out this weekend. And it's got... what's his name? Out of Billions.
Not Damian Lewis.
No, the other one.
Paul Giamatti.
Paul Giamatti, yeah. It looks good.
Okay, we'll check that out as well.
It's like a nice character-based thing.
Okay, nice. Do you have any recommendations?
Recommendations? What's coming out?
Real Housewives of Beverly Hills.
I've literally just been watching absolute rubbish. Don't judge me. Real Housewives, Beverly Hills and Salt Lake City.
That'd be probably funny if we all watched that. That'd be good.
You should.
I haven't watched Saltburn yet. You watched Saltburn?
No, that's next on our list.
No. Do you know what we were talking about that today, actually, when I met the girls? And I was like, don't talk about it because I've not seen it yet. And I'm like, how not? Just going to watch it.
That's what I like. I like when there's a bit of buzz about a film and everybody's watching it. That makes me watch a film. Like, everyone's talking about it. Easily led. I'm like a sheep.
Yeah, let's do Saltburn.
So, yeah, we chatted about Maestro, Wonka. We talked about that. And then we'll talk about that. We'll talk about Saltburn next. That's a good show.
A bit of a slating after the awards, didn't he?
Who's that, sorry?
Maestro got a bit of a slagging off after the awards, after not getting the, was it the Golden Globe?
You didn't get it. Well,
I think it was.
I was reading and people seemed to think that it was a real ego, a real vanity project, and fancy training 6 years to be a conductor and all that and things. People weren't happy with it. It was a bit horrible.
Yeah, but is that not what you're supposed to do, to be really committed to something?
And him going, oh, you have to such and such, and then they're going, and yet Cillian Murphy was told 6 months before that he was going to be Oppenheimer, and he did it like that, you know, whereas, yeah, I know, you just think, well...
That's a bit rubbish. What's that got to do? You appreciate the... Maybe it's just because, I don't know, we're in, like, actors as well, but you appreciate the effort and the time that you put into something, and then, like, the payoff that you get...
That's what I mean, though. We used to celebrate the endeavour of things that people would do, you know, like Christian Bale or Robert De Niro preparing for Jake LaMotta and Raging Bull or something like that, you know. And that's what I mean about the whole critical thing. People are being educated to be critics about things that they're actually not that qualified to be critics of. You know, and I would much rather, I mean, I don't feel I'm qualified to criticize somebody else's work, really. I want to celebrate, I want to enjoy it, you know, and if I didn't like something, I'll try and see the good in it. And I just wish that was what people did. We're all now so tempted to volunteer our opinions, and which is great if you've got something nice to share.
Well, this is,
I'm going to ruin somebody's enjoyment or something.
This is what I mean about being easily influenced. And I mean, I kind of talked about this on a recent episode, actually, whereas, like, I was doing the format, whereas my guests were picking the film that we were going to talk about, right? So, because they've picked the film, it's like one of their favourites, right? So, if then I watch the film and I don't like it, I'm not going to do the podcast going, you're an idiot, you're wrong. Yeah. I'm gonna find something about it that I could talk about. You know what I mean? Because that would be the right thing to do. But people just don't do that in society. It's easier to think to find the negative. It's easier to tweet something that's negative because you get more to say about it. You get more of a response. And honestly, one of my New Year's resolutions was to be off social media a little bit more. I'm failing horribly at it, and it annoys me. It distracts me from things. Yeah. I'm watching a film.
From the flamingos in your pool.
Yes.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I love that. That moment of the flamingos just took me back to watching Lost for the first time and the polar bear that appears. I thought, what? I don't know. I just was like,
I don't remember that.
Yeah, polar bear, and there was a horse in Lost.
In the first episode? I only saw the first couple of episodes and I stopped watching.
No, it wasn't the first episode, but it was in like season one. I was like, what is going on?
I'm currently looking for a new TV show to start.
We were told to start Fargo.
Fargo, I've not seen, but I love the film. You've not seen the film. That's when we could watch it.
Gregor's recommended Fargo. Gregor and I differ quite a lot.
You do. Have you seen the film? Have you seen the Coen Brothers film Fargo?
Yeah.
Watched the film. Yeah.
I liked it. Very, very good.
Fargo. We've watched all sorts of things. We watched Slow Horses, the last series of that.
Mm.
I like that. It's funny. I don't want to give anything away, but when it gets action-based, Slow Horses, we did notice that it becomes not so good.
Okay.
One of the things that makes Slow Horses so good is the dialogue, the characters.
Okay.
And it gets action based for a couple of an episode and a half. It kind of loses its way a little bit. That was, you know, that's not a. I mean, stick by it. It's worth watching. You know, the strengths in that series is basically the dialogue's brilliant and the characters are brilliant. And we watched Fool Me Once with Michelle Keegan and Joanna Lumley, yeah.
Any good? That was recommended to me recently.
Worth it. It's difficult to talk about these things and not give anything away, but
no, I know.
Worth it. I liked Based on a True Story. I think I talked about that last time, the Kaylee Cuoco.
Kaylee Cuoco, yeah. I've not seen it, but my mum and dad watched that.
But it's interesting how we're now seeing lots of programmes about true crime and, you know, about podcasts. So Only Murders in the Building and then this, you know. So, I suppose that's cool, yeah.
What's going on?
I'm looking forward to seeing things like Napoleon and Killer of the Flower Moon. And
The Boy Who Swallowed the Universe, that's meant to be really good.
Interesting.
Ooh.
That's, okay, cool. That's things about a lot, so that's, I think I want to watch that.
I'd be really interested to hear your opinion on Killers of the Flower Moon, that new Scorsese film. I was lucky enough to see it in the cinema because it is very long and I don't know if we'll be focused as much if I saw it in the house.
Right.
So maybe set aside an evening and close the blinds and try and get in amongst that film. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah,
it was good. It was good. But listen, thank you so much for your time this evening. It's been lovely catching up with you.
Thanks for suggesting that we should close the blinds and set in for the evening. It's our anniversary at the weekend.
Is it?
Oh.
There you go. Watch something like Saltburn. I don't think anything weird happens then whatsoever.
Okay.
30 years.
Uneventful, you mean? Just like our marriage.
Well, congratulations, Amanda. You've really put in a shift.
I have put in a shift.
30 years.
It's a pearl anniversary, so I have to get a pearl.
Such an old lady, isn't it? Pearls. My pearl anniversary! I can't believe it.
You having a party?
No.
Hate people.
Oh, come on.
You'd have a party.
What?
She'd have a party and we can come over.
You don't have any friends. Come over and watch a film.
Yeah. That's what 30 years manages us to you, no friends.
What was the first film you saw together?
I don't need a friend. Aladdin, wasn't it?
No.
Was it not?
No.
We did go together to see Aladdin, though.
Yeah, I know I remember the first film we went to see.
Then?
We didn't watch the film very much.
No, I think we did.
Oh, very good.
I see.
It was Naked Lunch. At the Cameo in Edinburgh.
Was it?
Yeah. Random. How
I don't
random.
Think that was me.
Yes, it was you.
I think we should do one of those like relationship Q&A things where like we have the same set of questions but the other person has to answer about the other person.
It was definitely Aladdin because that was in Perth. We weren't in Edinburgh together for a long, long time.
We'll get back to you.
We'll get back to you. Okay, everybody. Well, thank you very much for listening to this episode. Please tune in next time if you really want to. And yes, we'll catch you down the road. Thank you very much.
Bye.
Bye.